fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. Hey, happy Monday. Starting off a whole nother week, setting the tone for a week and a holiday week at that. Not sure if you're aware or not, but we are going into Easter later on. Good Friday and then Easter Sunday. That's coming up this week. It's kind of weird that it happens to fall on a March month instead of an April month, but you know, that's the way we roll, I guess, for 2024. The oddness continues, so let's get set for another holiday weekend. Our first big one, really, since the beginning of the year. Boy, we got a lot to talk about today. There was a lot that happened over the weekend, and at the end of last week, we need to recap, so let's jump right into it. From the heartland of the nation, welcome into it. So wonderful to have you. Radio, TV, live streaming, and podcasting. This is The Voice Reason. I am Andy Hoosier, doing it like we do every single day.
Doing live!
Which is what we love to do here on the program. Your millennial general reporting for duty like we do every single day. Robert Clark, he'll be joining us at the bottom of this hour. He is the director of marketing for the organization known as Stand Together. We'll talk about NATO, their involvement in some of the conflicts in Europe right now. We have, obviously, Russia and Ukraine, with Russia being concerned about NATO creeping up onto the borders of Russia. So we'll talk about that, plus the military strength of NATO, the nations that are involved in it that are contributing their military and finances into it, and how much are we actually participating in that program overall. So we'll get to all that and more coming up at the bottom of the hour. Before we go any further, though, and before we get into our big issues of the day, programming note for you, and I have to thank you immensely, and I did this over the weekend on the nationally syndicated show as well, but because this is, you know, the weekday program, and obviously people like to listen on their way home or wherever you may be and listening to it on our numerous different radio stations, I have to thank you immensely. Over the weekend, it is official, but we officially hit 100,000 downloads on our podcast for this radio program. That is, holy cow, man. That is phenomenal, and it's because of you continuously listening to this program each and every day, whether it's on the radio, whether it's the podcast afterwards, however you listen to it. I can't thank you enough. This is amazing that we've hit this monument. I never thought, honestly, when I started a radio show all the way back when, I always dreamed of it, but never thought it would actually hit. So we hit 100,000 downloads on this show, and it continues to grow. We're breaking records, which we've never seen this many before. We're hitting it with our annual downloads. It's awesome. Thank you so much. We love you to death. Now that we're growing with more radio affiliates on this program during the weekend with our syndicated show on the weekends, it is amazing. So you guys are awesome. I can't thank you enough. And the fact that you want to listen to me drivel on each and every day is absolutely amazing. So thank you for that. With that programming note, we also have our live stream that is our video feed on our website now at HoosierReason.com. We're still working out some glitches in there. I guess it's, you know, doing a little bit of a skipping kind of thing, but we are working on the quality of the video. We're also on Roku TV, thanks to our friends over at OpsLens, OPSLENS.com. They are working really hard right now, which I think is where the glitchiness is coming from. They're overhauling their entire website, which is kind of crazy. So they're overhauling that. They're adding new features. They're focusing more so on the shows, again, with all the different programs that they actually feature, us being one of them in their primetime slot, which is a great honor. So we love those guys to death at OpsLens. Download their app, check out their website, and you can see my show along with so many other shows on there. Armed American Radio with Mark Walters, he's on there, and then some other great shows that they broadcast all throughout the day and the weekend. So we thank them, and because of them and because of you and all the dedicated listenership that you've had for years of this program, we've hit 100,000 downloads on this show. So that is awesome. We love you guys to death. Thank you so much. One more time. Can we do that? That's great. Wow. The fact that you guys listened for that long is pretty crazy. All right, let's get into what's trending. There's a lot to talk about today for sure.
What's going on in this world of mine? There's a whole lot of killing in this world of mine. Somebody's got to help this world of mine.
So we have big news from the weekend where apparently Donald Trump actually getting a little bit of a breather. Now, this does not mean that the justice system has corrected itself, but it does mean that five times, apparently, according to Donald Trump now, they've overturned some major decisions from the progressive Democrats looking to try and throw Donald Trump in jail or financially destroy him going into election season. They are desperate to do whatever it takes for Donald Trump to be off the ballot or to be unable to run for president. But if you have not heard the big news of the day today, that the fraud case coming out of New York, the amount of money that Donald Trump has to pay has dropped from $454 million down to $175 million today. Donald Trump back in court making this statement after the judgment.
I built a great company. But I don't want to have a crooked judge named Ngoren and a crooked, horrible, the worst, I would say without question, attorney general in the country. The most obnoxious and the worst attorney general in the whole country. And she did it for political reasons. Go back and take a look at her ads. We will stop Trump. Well, she knows nothing about me. I never heard of her. She was advertising and she took ads in saying, we will stop Trump. We will stop him. Vicious. I said, boy, that's a bad one. Then I looked, she got elected. But then she tried to do it with the governor and it didn't work. She went after the current governor, who's much more talented than she is. She went after the current governor. She was very nasty. And she polled at about 3%. She polled at nothing. And after 6 weeks or 7 weeks, she pulled out of the race. She ran for governor, you know, on what she was doing to me. She thought that would work. It didn't work.
All right, that audio from Fox News, that was Donald Trump earlier today after the court appearance. He did say he would be paying the $175 million either in cash or by a bond surety within the next 10 days. According to the financial reports, he does have roughly $500 million on hand in cash that is for the campaign that he could be utilizing. On the other hand, at the same time today, this is why it's kind of hysterical, and this is the mindset of a business guy, and the business guy that always seems to turn out relatively well at the end of the day, is that as of today, the social media site of Truth Social, also about ready to go public as that merger is moving forward, and him owning a massive amount, obviously, of those shares of the company to the point of his shares equal the total sum of roughly $4 billion. That's with a B. So while he can just turn around and just pay this very easily, with $175 million, he's going to be walking into closely $4 billion of shares that he's going to have valued of Truth Social as it goes public on the stock market here really about in the next week or so as that merger continues, and that merger, I believe, getting finalized today. So he's turning out on the positive end of that. Doesn't matter, though. It's still the principle of the issue of should he be paying a fine for a civil fraud suit in New York for something that's not really fraudulent because he never actually did anything wrong. Is there a moral stance that needs to be taken here, and should he be paying it? Now, I think he's at the point where he's on the campaign trail. He wants to just pay it and make it disappear and go away so he can focus on the next issue and the next fraud case or whatever case they're trying to bring up with him to keep him tied up in court as opposed to being on the campaign trail. But there is a principle of the matter of should he be paying $175 million for a case where there were no victims and no one was harmed and it was really out of his hands and he didn't actually do anything wrong. And he inflated the value of his assets. We need to be seizing the assets. I don't know if you saw or not, but CNN, I believe, over the weekend was talking to an individual about before this amount actually got lowered to $175 million. There was a guest, I don't know who it was on CNN, that made the comment that, well, Mar-a-Lago, which, by the way, remember, the value of Mar-a-Lago was only $18 million, according to the Democrats that tried to throw him into a court case there, saying that it wasn't worth $100 million. It was only worth like $18 million. So they're trying to deflate that one. Then they had CNN and some expert on CNN saying that the only way that he could actually pay for this $454 million was by selling Mar-a-Lago because Mar-a-Lago is valued at close to $200 million. Wait, what? What was that? Wait a second. I thought it was only worth $18 million. No. It was worth $18 million when he tried to use it as an asset for taking out loans, but now it's worth $200 million for him to sell his property and then be able to pay off a judgment of him overvaluing his assets. Does this make any sense to anyone? Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. So, nonetheless, Donald Trump coming out on the positive side for this one. Still, the principle of the matter that we have to fight and the corruption in the court system, but by golly, we're going to do it, and he's going to come out on top on this one. So, that $4 billion worth of shares that he has in Truth Social may come in handy relatively soon. On the other front, there's some other big news that's going on.
What's trending today?
That we need to spend some time on. As you know, on Friday and over the weekend, we saw the passing of the $1.2 trillion spending package in Washington, D.C. Now, I want to clarify, and if you did not get a chance to listen to our syndicated program on the weekend, I highly recommend that you do. We sat down with Congressman Ron Estes, my congressional district here in the 4th District of Kansas, and because he's on the Ways and Means Committee, he gave us a little bit of the detail of this bill. And this bill, well, I was kind of confused on why this was a massive spending bill when we were working on actual appropriation bills. This bill, for those that are not aware, was the final 6 appropriations packages all lumped together as one singular bill to be passed. As you know, we separated the appropriations into 2 parts, and we passed the first 6 at the beginning of March, which is what Mike Johnson wanted to do. The second portion was what this bill was of the 6 conglomerated together into $1.2 trillion. That's still a lot of money. That doesn't mean it's a good bill, but what it was the 6 appropriation bills, because my understanding was, wait a second, I thought we had already passed like 11 or 12 of the appropriation bills, so what are we doing going to spend this until the end of the fiscal year? But this was the final 6. Now, the problem, as you know, and as you heard going into Friday afternoon, if you were paying attention, was that both the Senate and the House had very little time to actually vote on this bill. In fact, they broke the rules by the 72-hour waiting period to understand and actually give a chance to read the bill, make it public for us to understand the bill before they actually voted on it. So we did another Fast and Furious, another Nancy Pelosi, pass it to see what's in it mindset, and come to find out there were some really, really, really bad things in this bill. There were some positives, but there are some bad bills, which according to Chip Roy, who was very angry at this bill, went on Fox News over the weekend on Friday, right before they voted on this bill, saying this.
I built a great company.
Nope, that's the wrong one. Let's try this one here. This is Chip Roy on Fox News.
This is not that. This is the opposite of that. You saw right now, we have Bill Malugin out there reporting, great Fox reporting as always. We have our Border Patrol and people in National Guard getting overwhelmed right now in El Paso with a flood of migrants flooding across the border. We're going to fund that. That's what Republicans are going to do in this bill. We're going to continue to fund that. If you care about the border, you're getting nothing here. It is completely false to say that we're getting anything here that will help. And in fact, what we're going to get is more money to process more people, which means you're going to get more people at the border. Nothing is going to stop the flow at the border in this bill. So we're funding open borders. We're funding the mass releases of people on in violation of the law, using parole, the same laws that were violated to release the individual who came in and killed Lake and Riley. I can't do that. No Republican should. Any Republican who votes for this bill should be ashamed of themselves. If you care about inflation, this bill spends at a higher level than Nancy Pelosi. This bill continues the regulatory assault on American hard workers through the climate agenda by the radical progressive Democrats, and we do nothing to seriously unwind it. You're not going to combat inflation while you're regulating us to death, while you're spending more money than we have. You can't beat inflation that way, and now you're seeing the Fed wrestle with it in real time, where they're trying to figure out what to do, and you know they want to cut rates, but they're not sure they can. Why? Because we have some stagflationary pressures that we're trying to manage right now.
Well, so you're
this
in
bill
no
will
vote.
Do nothing
like
to address
you're definitely
that.
So that audio from Fox News, again, that was Congressman Chip Roy from the state of Texas. That was the leverage, according to some Republicans who voted against this bill. Not only was it bad for the economy because it raises spending, which is typical for what government does, but it was also the leverage of Republicans to try and actually do something with immigration. After the failure of the passing of the Senate bill just a month or so ago that was led by James Lankford on immigration, they were hoping to include this into this appropriation bill and say that, we're not going to pass it unless we include immigration. That didn't happen, and Republicans not too happy about that. We'll continue this when we come back. It's a Monday here on The Voice of Reason. Lots to get to. Stay
this
here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome back into it. 24 minutes past the hour. So we have a $1.2 trillion spending package. I may play a clip of the interview we did with Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th District of Kansas, maybe tomorrow, because this is a big bill and I want to really go through it and see. I mean, the details are going to start finally trickling in after we realize what we just did. We got to pass it, see what's in it, remember? Yeah. So the spending packages are actually higher. We actually spent more money this year than what we did last year, which is ironic with the Republican-led House that's supposed to have the power of the purse that say that they're trying to clean up and actually get rid of wasteful spending. Now, that being said, obviously it's very difficult to do so because we have a one-vote majority coming up by the end of April when Mike Gallagher, the congressman from the state of Wisconsin, feels like vacating, which I get it. We can give him the proper farewell here. But also doesn't help out with the Republicans having a majority or working in unified step with Republicans. We don't seem to do that very well. So this not doing well, voting well for many conservatives in the House, a lot of them not voting for it. And it's frustrating for conservatives across the board, both in the Senate and the House, with what this bill ended up doing. Chip Roy, obviously, from Fox News, saying that he's not very happy with this one. They wanted to attach immigration to this bill, and to the point where Marjorie Taylor Greene ended up going into the weekend and filing for an impeachment of Speaker Mike Johnson for allowing this to go to the floor. And here's my message to you as the activist that is concerned about the spending that we're seeing in Washington, D.C., and seeing what we're voting on the floor. Remember that just about every single bill that goes onto the floor of the Senate or in the House has to go through a committee or multiple committees or a subcommittee before it actually gets to the floor to be debated on by the entire congressional group, whether it's the House or whether it's the Senate. So when a bill gets up there, which, by the way, is a very difficult thing for it to do, if you're familiar with how your state legislative sessions or government works, then you know that there's, you know, less than what, like 5-10% of the bills that actually get to the main floor, because all these other bills just sit below the level. Either they don't get through committees, or the Senate president or the Speaker of the House don't allow it to come up because they don't want them to, or just because it has no momentum whatsoever. So they just kind of sit on it to piggyback it onto something else. That's just how politics works. You can like it, dislike it, disagree with that mindset, but that's really the way that the governmental system works. When a bill gets to the floor, that means that there was enough support in some way for it to get there. So if a $1.2 trillion spending package gets to the House representative floor, that means it had to go through some type of committees in order for it to get to that point. Same with the Senate. So who allowed it to get to that threshold?
Andy, the government was going to shut down.
And I understand the fact that if the government shuts down, that people are going to die in the streets, right?
We're all going to die because of you!
We already know that fear of politics. That's why James Lankford's bill out of Oklahoma, essentially the Government Shutdown Prevention Act, says that that's not going to be on the table. And if we don't get to our spending deadlines by passing certain budgets, that we just continue on with certain spending levels until we actually get our act together, which is, Congress, by the way, your one duty of what you're supposed to do. But right now we're not at that point, and we haven't gotten that bill passed because Democrats love to use the fear of politics to say either pass this or else, again, the government will shut down and you're all going to die in the streets. And all those people on Social Security and all those on the military and all those on Medicaid, they're all going to die in the streets unless you actually pay this and actually pass this bill right now. No time. No time to actually pay attention and read the bill and look at the details. You got to do it fast and furious right now. Right now. No time. It's what we're up against. So now the details are coming out. And unfortunately, Mike Johnson fell for the fear, didn't want the government to shut down, even though it was on the weekend, instead of allowing the 72 hours on the floor to actually read the bill, debate the bill, and then vote on it on Sunday. So that way, by the time Monday morning comes, then we could actually have a full functioning government to save us and keep us safe each and every day. That didn't happen, and now conservatives are upset. Marjorie Taylor Greene pushing to impeach Mike Johnson now, not by causing chaos in the chamber, but by looking for a potential candidate to replace him with when the time is ready. She said as a warning, not as a pink slip. We'll see if that actually moves forward or not. Robert Clark around the corner with Stand Together. We'll shift gears. We'll talk about NATO, what's going on in Europe, and more coming up for a Monday here on The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When reason meets radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Oh, yes, it is. Reason, common sense, rationale. That's just what we do here on this program. So great to have you with us on a Monday. By the way, real quickly, there is one bit of positive news, which, again, if you drink, I heard this analogy from actually an elected official earlier today that said, you know, when you're drinking sweet tea, it looks like it's nice and it tastes nice, but if there's cyanide in it, then it doesn't matter how sweet or how wonderful the tea actually tastes. It's still poisoned, which is why this ridiculous $1.2 trillion spending package was out of control and why we never should have passed it. But, you know, government shutdown fear, we're all going to die, that
we're
kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. I know.
But there was a bit of positivity in this bill, which was, and I have to admit, I don't hear this very often, but when was the last time you heard of a government agency actually shutting down and closing doors? Anybody? Not usual, right? Not usually. But according to Fox News, in this $1.2 trillion spending package, it did close the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, as they have announced that they will be dissolving after the passing of this package. So, whoa, like, man, that's kind of crazy. That's kind of crazy. Never. That leads to a little bit deeper conversation we'll have later on about where ESG stands and where this whole diversity and inclusion garbage is going to be shifting to, because obviously the government won't allow it to just go away. They're just going to do it in a different form. So we'll get to that a little bit later. But I want to shift gears here and get to our latest in what's trending.
What's trending today?
Obviously, there is a lot to talk about with what's going on overseas, obviously, Russia and the Ukraine, foreign policy, European Union, NATO, and so on and so forth. And what's the perspective of maybe some of the younger generation across the country? Because right now we have, in my opinion, we have a major lack of understanding or a major lack of content because of the content control we see on Google and on social media, where the vast majority of the younger generation gets their information. Really happy to have on the program to talk about some of this and so much more. He is a contributor to Young Voices, young-voices.com, if you want to check out the website as we look at trying to educate the youth of America. Excited to have on here Mr. Robert Clark. Robert, how are you, my friend?
Doing well, Andy. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah. I'm excited to chat with you. I appreciate it very much. There's a lot to break down and talk about here, but let's focus on you being a foreign policy expert. Let's talk about what's going on with Russia and the Ukraine, what's going on with Israel, because I know that there are many right now that are losing their minds over the fact that Republicans aren't jumping on board and just giving a blank check to some of the conflicts globally right now because they say it's in our best interest to do so. Do you agree with that mindset, and where do you think we are right now in those conversations of where we should be standing in supporting some of these conflicts?
Well, Andy, I think we're entering a difficult crossroads for the United States moving forward. There's this burgeoning conflict in the Middle East that could spiral into a larger situation where American boots may have to be on the ground in some capacity. There's the war in Ukraine that's going on for its second year now, and a lot of our defense officials are warning that we could see some kind of kerfuffle over Taiwan in the next 5 to 15 years. So with all of these things kind of coming to a head at the same point, it's important for our country to start really evaluating the trade-offs and what we do and how we engage. Yeah. Ultimately, we can't be everything everywhere all at once, and we're going to start running up against some real hard barriers in the near future if we don't start reconsidering our involvement in some of these regions.
That is very true. We've definitely tried to be the quote-unquote world police, which I understand needing to be involved in certain places, having interest in certain places, wanting to have strong relationships with certain places. Like, that makes sense. We need to have strong allies, and we need to be in part of the global economy, whether, you know, people like that or not. That's just the way things are today. But there's a difference between being involved in everything and even manipulating it to our benefit and being an isolationist nation, which I don't think a lot of people want either. There's a happy medium in between those two, isn't there?
Absolutely, for sure. There's a lot of concerns that if we don't entrench ourselves deeper in the conflict in Ukraine or continue providing these substantial aid packages to the government in Kyiv, that Russia will steamroll across Eastern Europe and start taking out NATO countries. And I think that's a lot of hyperbole from folks that don't want to see America change its current approach to foreign policy. And at the end of the day, it took Ukraine months to take relatively small towns like Bakhmut or Avdiivka. It's unrealistic to expect them to go up against the full might of the NATO alliance and really be able to punch through and leave us in a panic. So I think there's absolutely a better approach here that's a little more moderated. I don't think we necessarily need to retrench from the world. We do have important interests in these regions, and there is a lot of value for us being involved. But how we go about doing that needs to be a little more metered.
That is very true. Do you think it's almost a generational thing on our stances on foreign policy specifically? I saw during the presidential primary debates for the Republican side the vast difference, and I'm a millennial, I'm 35 years old, so I guess I'm on the a little bit younger end of the spectrum here, but watching the difference between like Vivek Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley, just where they despised each other, and it was kind of entertaining to watch on the debate stage. But those two, to me, not only was it just a policy difference on foreign policy, on how we should be involved, but it almost seemed like a generational thing, because my generation really does, I think, believe more so of why are we so involved there when we don't have our act together here on the home front? We have poverty, we have crime rates, we have an open border, we have all this madness going on here, and yet we're concerned about sending billions of dollars elsewhere. My generation doesn't see the value in that. Are you seeing it in a generational difference, do you think?
I think so. I'm a part of the millennial generation as well, and I think we grew up in an era where, you know, we suffered these 2 decades and running now, to be quite honest, conflicts in the Middle East that have kind of spiraled out of control. Arguably, Afghanistan was sound when it started, but it turned into this sort of nation building mission over the course of 20 years. There's a lot to debate about the merits of Iraq. I lean on the side that we should have never gone in the first place. But either way, however you feel about those conflicts, it's undeniable that over the course of the past 2 decades, we had a lot of blunders and there was a lot of misuse of our military power. And I think that's made our younger generations here more skeptical of what we do abroad and why we do it. And that leads to a lot of this questioning and this sort of soul searching that we see going on about American foreign policy today.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking with Robert Clark. He's with Young Voices. You can find him online at joinyv.org. You can check out all the information there on this issue with NATO and Russia. Obviously, Russia doing the interview with Tucker Carlson and some of the statements that they've made, they're concerned about NATO coming up on their border, which is what they don't want. When it comes to NATO, what is their involvement or what should be their involvement? Because while we are an ally to the Ukraine, I can see assisting them to some degree. But with all of the money and all the resources and all the guns and everything that we've done to support them, why is it, at least in the rhetoric that we hear in the media today and from the other side of the aisle, why is it that either we send all of this stuff or else Ukraine will fall and Russia will just take over everything and it's all on the backs of the U.S. to do it or else no one else can sustain this? Why can't the other nations pick up the slack and take care of this instead of only us?
Well, I think the real answer here is that our partners in Europe have sort of enjoyed the past 30 years since the collapse of the Soviet Union. They've been riding the peace dividend. You know, without a major boogeyman in their backyard, they've been able to shift a lot of their budgets away from military spending and defense and security into popular things like welfare programs, infrastructure, the stuff that voters typically tend to enjoy. And as a result, you have these atrophied supply systems. It's difficult for our partners in Europe to even produce, you know, the basic things, handguns, ammunition, let alone advanced equipment like rocketry, tanks, warships, so on and so forth. So we find ourselves in a situation where Russia and Ukraine are both firing more artillery in a matter of days than most of our European partners produce over the course of a year. Now, we face a similar challenge in that we haven't built the same sort of infrastructure for this high-intensity, traditional, conventional warfare that we're seeing in Ukraine for the past several decades as well. But at the end of the day, our European partners have really let things fall apart on the military front. Now, they've made a lot of progress in these past couple of years. We've seen a number of countries meet that 2% defense spending minimum threshold for the NATO alliance, but we're still short by about 20 nations to hit that point. And a lot of the countries that have gotten there are the smaller ones. They, you know, they have small economies. Even if they're hitting 2% or 4% or 10%, it's not really a whole lot of real military power. So the great challenge here is that Europe has left itself relatively defenseless compared to what it probably really needs. And they've come to really depend on us. And the challenge now is, you know, if we need to shift our attention somewhere else, Europe's going to be left high and dry unless they start stepping up a bit.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that they're starting to. Do you think that this was the wake-up call with this conflict where they kind of woke up and were like, oh, maybe we should start building guns and ammunition and things again because we might need them in the near future?
I do think the conflict has been helpful in that regard, but I think maybe a larger pivot point has been American politics domestically in the past 4 or 5 years. Donald Trump made a number of comments about the NATO alliance and what his opinion was on its merits, and I think that served as a wake-up call for a number of leaders in Europe that maybe it's not good to put all of their eggs in one basket with the United States all the time, because ultimately it is up to the White House how we engage with the alliance long term.
Yeah, that is very true. Robert, we got to take a hard break here. Can you stick over another segment with us?
Absolutely.
Awesome. I want to continue this conversation. I want to shift it over to Israel and what's going on in the Middle East as well, because we're getting pushback, obviously, from the White House, from the Biden administration, from the left side of the aisle about how we need to do this ceasefire. Israel adamant they're not going to be doing that. So I want to get your thoughts on where we stand there and what we may see in the very near future and what the next generation, as we do see the next generation up and coming, on what their stances might be on these foreign policy issues after seeing so many blunders over the past couple decades. We'll do that and more coming up for a Monday on The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
You know, I am curious, I guess, as one of those millennials who have been through the ringer with some of our foreign policy, how much enthralled we are with other nations. I have been intrigued on why we're so fascinated by some of the other nations and what they do. For example, while my thoughts and prayers and condolences go to them with them battling this issue, I'm curious on why the media is so asphyxiated with the royal family and their battle with cancer. Kate Middleton announcing that she has cancer, and which is why we haven't seen her really since the holidays. King Charles upset and frustrated that he's not recovering from his cancer treatments as quickly as what he'd like. I get it. Like, okay, cool. They're an ally, and we, I guess, should know what their cancer treatments are like. But why do we care? Why do we care? I would like to tell you this. Not that I don't care about them personally. I just don't. I don't know why, man. I don't know why we're so fixated on the media, man. I heard that they broke into some of the March Madness basketball stuff last week to announce a Kate Middleton getting cancer treatment. Like, broke into the basketball broadcast for that. And while I don't watch basketball, if I were watching the basketball game, I don't really care. Nonetheless, we're hanging out with Robert Clark. He's with Young Voices. He's a foreign policy expert and contributor to Young Voices. JoinYV.org is the website if you want to go and check them out. Let's talk about the Middle East for a minute here, Robert, for the last couple of minutes that we have. Let's talk about Israel and our support with them, or really lack thereof, now that we're seeing from the Biden administration, where Netanyahu is saying that he's going to finish the job because he's tired of being bombarded by Hamas each and every day. And now we have Chuck Schumer out there saying that we need to advocate for a special election, like we have a say in what they do with their government. And the Biden administration really trying to set down the law and crack down on Netanyahu for a ceasefire. Does it really sound like we're supporting them like we should be?
So it's an interesting question, Andy. I think obviously Israel has every right to pursue its persecution of the terrorists that attacked them on October 7th as it sees fit. This is a sort of uncharted territory for United States-Israel relations, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes in the coming days and weeks. But my actual concern here is that we've jumped the gun on policy in relation to this conflict. At the end of the day, since October 7th, American troops have fallen under attack from related sort of associated militias that are aligned with Hamas almost 200 times in Iraq, Syria, and the greater Middle East in general. I mean, it was just a few weeks ago, so a month or so, the terrible attacks on Tower 22 near the Jordanian border, where we lost 3 American service members. These are still going on. All of our troops are still in harm's way, and there hasn't been any kind of policy change that might address that. And at the end of the day, I think that's where we should be focusing our attention and energy as a country, and where the White House and the Biden administration should be working out some better plans rather than trying to address the situation between Israel and Hamas directly.
That is a cause for concern. We got just about a minute left here, and I want to ask you, do you think this is going to escalate into a bigger conflict if this isn't addressed right away? And because of the attacks that we've seen on U.S. military by us being in the region now and us not retaliating or doing anything in response, does that make us look weak to open up and encourage those to continue to attack us further?
So in terms of this becoming a bigger conflict, I think the risk is absolutely there. All it takes is one particularly bad successful strike by one of these militias. If we lose a barracks full of guys, it'll be almost inexcusable for us to not respond in a big way, right? In terms of us not responding more vociferously than we already have, though, I think the most important thing we need to understand about this is that right now our troops are deployed in these sort of security peacekeeping missions, train and advise as it is. They don't have the unilateral capacity to strike back in a big way, mostly because we've drawn down a lot of the resources in this region. And I don't think it would be the right move for us to ramp that back up. The most important thing that we need to consider is that we're just leaving these men and women out there as soft targets for these groups.
Yeah.
The best thing we can do is probably redeploy them. We have two carrier groups in the area now. That's more than enough for us to be able to hit anybody we need to if we have to. Keeping our guys on the ground is just putting them in harm's way.
Yeah, that is very true. It's a fascinating topic, and it's very scary to see what this could potentially lead into on both accounts, with Ukraine and Russia and with Israel, and how long these continue to go. I was hoping that this would be a quick one and done, eliminate and be done with it, so we could bring peace back, and obviously that hasn't happened. It's Robert Clark. You can check him out online at joinyv.org. It's Young Voices. Robert, we appreciate the time very much, my friend. Let's get you back on and do it again soon.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Great conversation there. We love it. Again, Robert Clark, you can check out all the information at joinyv.org. That does it for us today. Back at it again tomorrow for a post-Monday celebration. Until then, be your own voice of reason. This is the Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio.